This just in, hot off the bench press. Planet Fitness has added new strength equipment. Save $28 or more when you join today, and you can be one of the first to try it out. We're raising the bar with new benches, and our new hack squat will have you actually looking forward to leg day. Plus, we're still repping all of the best-in-class equipment we've always had, with most clubs open 24 hours, so you can work out your way on your time. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more. Just $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 10th. See home club for details.
You know who you are?
Steven is my name.
Even Steven.
Will you say something, Steven?
Steven or Else Media.
Here's a great little snack to tide you over till dinner. If you want something delicious and nutritious, cheese is a super snack. Look, a wagon wheel. When my get up and go has got up and went, I hanker for a hunk of cheese. When I'm dancing a hold down and my boots kind of slow down, or any time I'm weak in the knees, I hanker for a hunk of, a slab or slice of chunk of, a snacker day is a winner, and yet won't spoil my dinner. I hanker for a hunk of cheese. Yahoo!
From Steven or Else Media, this is Growing Up Geek episode number 3, the top 5 Saturday morning cartoons. Part 1. Hello and welcome to Growing Up Geek, the podcast that's not known to perspire, but when it does, it sweats pure nostalgia. I'm your host, my name is Steven, and I'll be your pilot on this temporal odyssey through the geek-centric cultural zeitgeist of my youth. From the 70s through the 80s and on into the 90s, we'll explore the movies, the music, the books, the comics, and the TV shows that shaped my childhood and made me, well, me. But here's the thing, folks, I'm not alone today. See, I want to wrap up our discussion on Saturday morning cartoons with a bang, and I figured I needed a little help. So I put up the geek alert up there in the sky, and it was answered by one very special dude. One half of the Flip City podcast, Mr. Wayne Cordova. Welcome to the show.
Steven, thanks so much for having me, man. I've been looking forward to this.
You have the honor of being the first Growing Up Geek guest.
Well, I don't take that lightly because I have grown up geek, sir. And this is a topic that is near and dear to my heart. And so I'm excited to tackle it with you. And if any of you listen to the Flip City podcast, you know, I love me a good top five. And so this is going to be a fun time.
Well, and here's the thing, full disclosure for all the folks out there, Wayne, I'll have you talk about the Flip City podcast here in a bit, talk about everything about it, fill us all in. But in essence, it's a nostalgia podcast, talking about stuff from the 80s and the 90s and wrestling and cartoons and movies and stuff. And Wayne is one of my clients. He's hired me to do the edits on the show. And I have been planning Growing Up Geek for like a year, year and a half maybe. And I kept running through different ideas for the first episode of the first season or whatever, what I was going to do first. And then you guys do an episode on, I think it was a draft, Saturday morning cartoon draft.
Oh, yeah.
And what exactly was the subject? What were you drafting? Do you remember?
So, at Flip City, we like to do kind of these wild drafts and everything. And so this particular draft, I like to come up with, I like to work within the box. And so to kind of have these like boundaries that force you to get creative. And so the Saturday morning cartoon draft, we call it the ultimate Saturday morning cartoon draft. And the format, though, was you actually had to come up with a lineup. And so you actually had to come up with, you know, what was the starter cartoon? What was like the 6 a.m. nobody else is up cartoon? And then you had to work yourself up hour by hour throughout the morning. And then you actually wrapped up the draft with your favorite or your choice live action show. Because on Saturday mornings, you know, once the live action shows kicked in, you knew it was almost over, you know? And so, yeah, you know, you would throw that in at the end. And so that was the format for that. And so the list I came up with for that episode wasn't necessarily my top favorites. My goal was to put together a heavy hitter lineup for Saturday morning. And so, yeah, I love those kind of things. And when we do drafts that have these crazy rules attached to them, You know, it was Greg. Greg came up with a great draft one time that had to do with arcades.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had like certain games we had to fill and, you know, it was a blast. And so, yeah, but this by far is one of my favorite all time topics, man.
Mine too. And as I was editing the show, of course, I start thinking, all right, well, if I was part of this episode, what would I choose for each of those hours? And by the end of it, I was kind of putting my list together and I said, you know what? This would make the perfect subject for the first episode. And turns out now the first season of Growing Up Geek. And so with Wayne's blessing, that's what I went with.
You know, it's funny. I remember you having the idea for this podcast back when there's another podcast that I do.
That's right.
Called One to Grow On. And yep. That's more like a solo podcast where it's more like informational. And then it kind of turns from informational to motivational at the end, just like the old One to Grow On segments on Saturday mornings.
Yeah. And so
it kind of does that. And I remember you and I talking about, you know, this idea that you had. And the thing for me is that as much as I love creating retro-based content, I also love consuming retro-based content. And so when you said you, the wizard of the airwaves, was going to look into doing a geek-centric retro podcast, I was all in. I was all in. And so, yes, in the first two episodes, man, were so great. And I can't believe you already want to get canceled by adding me onto this show. So,
well, I like to walk the high wire, you know. I'm a risk taker.
The ratings went down in episode three.
I remember that as well, you know, because I had been here. Here's the thing. I love geek culture, of course, because I did grow up geek. I love comics. I love all that stuff. But I have really been getting into like history podcasts and documentary style podcasts, true crime, stuff like that. And so for a few years, I've been wanting to try to put together some kind of history type podcast. And I just couldn't touch upon what I wanted to do because I'm not a history guy. I mean, I listen to these podcasts and I think, why was I not getting into history in school? It was such a boring subject in school. And it's so interesting now that I'm in my 50s that, you know, I wish I would have paid attention in school. So when it comes to trying to put together a freaking history podcast, there would be so much research involved for me that it just sounds exhausting. I start editing your One to Grow On show and I just went, holy crap, this is what I want to do. And the first thing I did was I reached out to you and I said, dude, do you mind if I do a show like this, but not like this? And you're like, yeah, do it, man. I want to hear it. And so, yeah.
I've always lived by the philosophy of a rising tide lifts all ships. And so it's one of those things where the more the merrier, because I want to listen to this, you know, podcast. I want to be a fan. And so even though Greg and I, you know, we put out, you know, this content, I'm like, man, I don't want to listen to my own voice all the time, you know, and it's like, I want to listen to this. And there was stuff that I've already learned in the first couple of episodes that was just mind blowing. And so it was just so cool. Again, just to have it. And then also to have a friend. I mean, you and I, we first connected because of another podcast called Comic Geek Speak.
Yep.
And
yep.
Being a part of those message boards. Remember message boards? You know, being a part of forums and all that kind of stuff. And so that was where all that, you know, first started. And it's literally the geek multiverse just converging together.
Yep.
It's so good.
Well, I'm really happy to have you on. I'm really happy to talk about this. We do have, I don't want to say we have a format. We have a subject. We're each going to count down our top five favorite Saturday morning cartoons.
Oh, yeah.
I already know what your list is. You already know what my list is. So we don't have any overlap. We each have some honorable mentions. We don't know. You know, I don't know what your honorable mentions are. You don't know what mine are. So we may have overlap there, but it's not going to be a structured. It's not the first two episodes are very structured. It's a single voice documentary style, you know, narrative type of show. But now we're just going to get all kinds of crazy and get all nostalgic and just wax nostalgic about the subject of cartoons on Saturday mornings. And so folks understand, I think I said it in both the first episodes, I went from 7 to 17 in the 80s, my formative years. You're the same age as my little brother. I think he was born the same year as you. So you are 4 years younger than me.
Okay.
You graduated in 94. I graduated in 90. So yeah, I think
I tell people all the time, man, that like I grew up in the sweet spot of pop culture, because not only growing up in 1976, you know, but being born in 1976, not only did that kind of give me a little runway of 70s pop culture, but I had an older brother. I still have an older brother. He's 9 years older than me. So imagine, you know, there's this kid who all he wants to do is be like his teenage brother, right? And so for us, like as we're growing up, everything he was into, I was into.
Yep.
You know, he had the Evel Knievel stunt toy set. I wanted to play with that Evel Knievel stunt toy set. He was into the $6 million man. I was into the $6 million man. He was into professional wrestling. I was into professional wrestling, a thing that has stuck with us through adulthood. And so for me, I really feel like I had that really cool runway of 60s to 70s pop culture that just kind of ran with me. And then the cool thing too about growing up geek like you and me was that our syndicated TV was loaded with shows from the 50s and 60s.
Oh, yeah.
And so that was just like a part of my, it was a long time before I realized that Gilligan's Island was actually filmed about 20 years before I was even born.
Yeah, it aired and was canceled before we were even born. And yet it was part of our daily lives because it was on
every single
you
day.
You know, in my household, it was Channel 41 out of Kansas City that played all that stuff. And so, yeah, I'm, you know, I like to think I'm in a sweeter spot because I'm a middle child, which explains a lot, folks. There's a piece of the puzzle for you. I got an older brother and a younger brother. And so my older brother in the 70s getting into Star Wars, I'm getting into Star Wars. And so between the two of us, our parents are getting us all this Star Wars stuff. And then as G.I. Joe starts to ramp up, I'm getting into that. And then my little brother is getting into that. And so between the two of us, my parents are getting us all kinds of G.I. Joe action figures and play sets and junk. And so, yeah, I got kind of the best of both worlds there. I got to be right in the middle. So
I love it. I love it. I was the baby. So that means I got everything.
Yeah. Yeah. I the only child or the only member of the immediate family with red hair. Neither of my parents had red hair. My grandmother had red hair. That's where I get it from. So, yeah, not only was I a middle child, I was a ginger, and I was the only one in the family that did not get into sports in any way. And so,
oh man,
spent a lot of time in my room reading comics. I'll tell you that. Reading comics, reading sci-fi fantasy novels, all that junk. All right. Before we get into our top five, I do have a couple of Saturday morning questions for you. First, wax philosophical for a second. What do Saturday morning cartoons mean to you? And not just the cartoons, but the entire experience.
Honestly, all of like Saturday morning meant everything to me as a kid. It was one of those things where it wasn't even just the cartoons, but it was that entire experience of Saturday morning was this regular ritual for me where, you know, I had two parents that, you know, that worked a lot of different hours and different things like that. And so it was like one of those things where we didn't have this like Saturday morning that was kind of, you know, very family based where it was like, okay, like, you know, this is what we're doing. You know, my dad may have been at work at some point or my mom may have been at work at some point. But, you know, for me growing up, I just remember waking up early. I was always an early riser from get go, you know, waking up early, grabbing my Pop-Tarts, grabbing my milk, getting, you know, everything all situated and set for the morning and parking myself on that couch with whatever toys I was playing with at the time and starting that morning off with, remember like those pre-Saturday morning cartoons? And it was just like random syndicated stuff that was, you know, either playing on your local, you know, station. And like, I remember specifically shows like the New Zoo Review. Things like that being like, you know, this random Sesame Street wannabe show with people in costumes doing their thing. It ended up that morphed into, you know, Zoobly Zoo and like all that kind of stuff. But it was always like some kind of random costume show that would air before your cartoons and then sitting down and watching those. And then for me, as the Saturday morning schedule, you know, would go, it would move into the, you know, late morning and early afternoon stuff because that was when I watched wrestling. That was when WWF Superstars of Wrestling would air. That's when, you know, I would get that wrestling fix for the week because that was way before the days of Monday Night Raw and Friday Night SmackDown and all that. If I want to know what was going on in the life of the Macho Man Randy Savage, I needed to watch WWF Superstars and see who he was facing for the next pay-per-view. And we would go and do that. That was when, you know, even as a kid, that's where I learned about baseball, because I would watch, you know, the baseball bunch.
Did you have, I don't like to use the word ritual, but was there like a special place for you to sit that you had to sit in that spot every week? Did you schedule out your viewing each season when the new crop of shows would come up, stuff like that?
Okay, so here's the thing. I catch a little bit of flack on the Flip City podcast for being a TV guide kid, okay? But I was a total TV guide kid. I lived for the fall preview special, man. That was my special. I mean, honestly, for what I would end up doing was the early inklings of what was new and happening for Saturday morning started off in comics for me. During the summer, you would get the comic, if you bought comic books on a regular basis, you would open it up. And a lot of times it would be a 2-page spread from every single channel. You know, and we only had 3 at the time, right? It was ABC, NBC, and CBS. And you would open it up. And you would see the ad. What's going to happen on, you know, what's new on Saturday morning on ABC? What's new on Saturday morning on CBS? What's new on NBC? And I remember immediately looking at that stuff going, okay, this is what I'm picking. This is what I'm picking. I'm going to check this out. And then when the fall preview issue would come out from TV Guide, that's when I really started circling and scheduling. And so for me, my ritual on Saturday morning would literally involve me. I mean, we lived in a nice, you know, little small house in New Jersey. And so it was like, there was my TV, you know, would reserve for Saturdays. I was really uncontested, really. Nobody kind of messed with me on Saturday morning. So, you know, I sat down in front of our living room TV on that couch. I had a chest of toys. And so I'd grab whatever kind of genre I was messing with at the time. So if it was G.I. Joe's or He-Man's, they would come and sit and watch with me so that I can have a battle in between commercials and stuff. But I would sit there and open up that TV guide and go listing by listing. And I would just kind of see, okay, what's up at 6 o'clock? What's up at 7 o'clock? And go from there. And the big dilemma would be if there was something on at the same exact time, that's when I became a channel flipper. And I grew up in the days where I had to dial. And so I had to like stand there sometimes and watch the show. And if it went to commercial, I'd go and flip over and see what was happening on the other show.
That's why for me, my special place to sit and watch the cartoons was right there in front of the TV. Because, you had to be able to reach up and flip that dial back and forth between your shows.
I don't even think I had access to a remote control until I was probably like 10 or 11 watching TV. Up until then, even then, like when we got cable, we got the cable box with the buttons that you push down. It was like ka-chunk, ka-chunk, ka-chunk.
Yep.
And I had to do that. And I would get yelled at all the time for flipping channels. And they're like, if you break the cable box, it's all over. No TV. Yeah. And so I had to be really precious with
that. If you were really slick, you'd get a cable box and you'd have an extra long cable for it. So you could sit there on the couch with it.
Drag it to the couch.
Yeah, exactly. That was our remote control back in the day.
But I do get, I get a lot of flack for that, for being that TV guide kid, man. And I can't tell you how much like I lived for that. It was between the comic book previews and then the fall preview issue where they would lay out everything going on. I was made.
Look, TV Guide was all we had back then. If you were not part of it, you didn't know. We weren't inundated on the internet with everything. You know, we weren't seeing stuff every day like, oh, we're going to make a show about this. It's not going to air for another 5 years. And so for those next 5 years, we're going to kind of dole out the news. Hey, we've cast this person in this role. Hey, we've cast, you know, no, we had the freaking TV guide and that's what we used to learn what was coming up. And in fact, I would never have known that they were making or airing the first G.I. Joe miniseries, The Mass Device, were it not for TV Guide. I remember my mom pointing that out to me. Hey, you like G.I. Joe, right? There's this show coming up. You should check it out. And TV, you had to have TV Guide. Otherwise, you just went into TV with, who knows what's going to be on.
Growing up in our era, we didn't even have the TV Guide channel or the channel guide. I didn't have that scrolling. That came, honestly, that came like early to mid 80s for me, like when I was a kid. And even then, who had the patience to sit there and wait for your show to pop up? That was it. So for me, it was those listings. And in a pinch, like in a pinch, Stephen, like if for some reason you didn't get that issue or you couldn't find it, you could do okay with the newspaper version of the TV listings.
Yeah. Oh,
but
yeah.
That was still, that was kind of like bootleg. I kind of felt a little weird, you know, like I was cheating on my TV guide. So I had to jump right in. Or like, you know, you get like the Parade magazine and yep. I'm like, well, there's nothing in here for me.
TV Guide also had articles, man. It had everything you wanted as a TV viewer.
I lived for the cheers and jeers. It was like, yeah. I was cheering and jeering along with all those articles that was on there. And then every once in a while, like I remember specifically, there was a couple of issues on the front cover that talked about like the state of cartoons on TV yeah. and, you know, and saving those. Yep.
Did you watch the primetime preview specials that they would air on the three networks to preview the new batch of cartoons?
Man, when those came out, I don't know about you, but did you feel a little bit more adult? Like when you're like, you're yes. sitting there, it's like, here it is. It's like, it's 8 p.m.
Yeah.
You know, we should be watching.
Out. Yeah.
It's dark out. We should be watching Dukes of Hazzard. We should be yeah. watching the A-Team. But instead, like we've got Punky Brewster in animated form telling us what's coming up in the fall season. And yep. I was blown away. And then I loved how they would do like a story behind like that episode. So right. it would be like, oh, you know, like all the bad guys from all the cartoons are banding against all the good guys. And then that's how we kind of get the, you know, the preview of the gummy bears and how that was going to turn out. It was a blast. It was a unique thing. They don't do that anymore. They don't bring anybody, all these shows together for anything anymore.
No.
That was the original Multiverse of Madness for me. Which yeah. was these fall preview shows.
That and Battle of the Network Stars.
that was the live action version of that, where right. you would get yeah. everybody together and see Mr. Cotter go up against Daisy Duke.
Yep. Yeah. yeah. It's funny because I have fond memories of those primetime preview specials. But until I went out and started looking for those preview shows on YouTube, I couldn't remember examples of any. And one that I found was, I don't even remember what year it was, but it was the year they made a Dukes of Hazzard cartoon.
Yes.
Because the whatever network that was on, the special had, who's the kid that played Chachi?
Scott Baio.
Scott Baio. He hosted and his band was there. They played a couple of songs. And at the same time, Boss Hogg and Roscoe from frickin' Dukes of Hazzard were trying to shut the whole thing down because they thought something illegal was going on.
Yes.
And then in between all that, they're playing previews for all the different new cartoons that are coming up. It was pretty funny.
Say, son, do you own this place?
Yeah, that's right.
Thank you. Now, tell me what's really going on here.
Just having a little fun, that's all. A little dancing, a little previewing.
Yeah, well, the way I see it, you need a partner to share in all this fun. And my share is 50%.
50-50?
Well, let me put it this way. If I don't like what's going on here, you and the shoe don't go on.
Did you know the fun fact of the Dukes of Hazzard cartoon was the fact that there was contract negotiations going on between Tom Wopat and John Schneider, right? They were the original Duke boys, right? Bo yeah. and Luke Duke. And so in the live action show, they got replaced by two replacements named Coy and Vance. And then the cartoon also starred Coy and Vance because for the same contract reasons. And then all of a sudden, when that got solved, even the cartoon got Bo and Luke back and all that. And it was just like, it was just it was a wild world to live in because you didn't have the internet or anything like this. Like, why yeah. are these two guys infiltrating my screen? And you had no idea as a kid why.
Yeah. That's literally back in the day when a show could be like, oh, you want more money? You're the star of the show. All right, we'll replace you with a cousin.
And we're literally
nobody's going to care. You know?
Oh, okay, Enos. You're going to get a spinoff? We're replacing you with Cletus.
Yeah. Jeez. Crazy time.
I love it.
All right. You ready to talk some top five all-time favorite cartoons?
I was literally born for this. I'm ready.
Growing Up Geek will be back after these messages.
This just in, hot off the bench press. Planet Fitness has added new strength equipment. Save $28 or more when you join today, and you can be one of the first to try it out. We're raising the bar with new benches, and our new hack squat will have you actually looking forward to leg day. Plus, we're still repping all of the best-in-class equipment we've always had, with most clubs open 24 hours, so you can work out your way on your time. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more. Just $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 10th. See home club for details.
Over the past 75 years, more than 10,000 chemicals have entered our food supply, but the EU allows just 300 additives. At Thrive Market, we prioritize quality, banning over 1,000 ingredients found in conventional grocery stores. Our Healthy Swap scanner helps you find better versions of your pantry essentials without the junk, dyes, or fillers, and everything is delivered right to your doorstep. So shop at a grocery store that actually cares about your health at thrivemarket.com/get started for 30% off your first order and a free $60 gift.
Do you love podcasting but hate editing? Do you have a number of episodes recorded but just can't find the time to get them edited and ready for release? Do you need help and you're not sure what to do? Well, come talk to me. My name is Stephen Orr. I have over a decade of experience recording and editing my own podcasts, and I want to put those skills to work for you. I can remove that background noise. I can reduce silences. I'll remove all of your ums and your uhs, as well as your throat clearings, sneezes and coughs and such. And I can even add your music and whatnot. And hey, my prices are quite reasonable. Check out edityourpod.com to get started. That's edityourpod.com. Or just reach out to me directly. Email edityourpod@gmail.com. Tell me what you need, and I'll tell you how I can help. And more importantly, quote you a cost. Edityourpod.com. Get started today. And now back to Growing Up Geek. Okay, you're my guest, so I'm going to let you go first with your number five.
All right, no pressure, but my top five happened early when I was a kid in the early 80s. The video game boom, you know, was happening. And so video games were so popular that they started to infiltrate Saturday morning. And this was, I don't know if it was the first, but it was definitely like the granddaddy of all video games, and they had to come to Saturday morning. And so my number five was Pac-Man. The animated series.
Nice.
This place is supposed to have the best pack burgers in town, Pepper.
Sounds great, Packy. I'm starving.
What'll it be, Mac?
We'll have two Wukka Wukka burgers and a couple of pack colons.
Coming right up. Okay, fellas, go for it.
And so it started off in 1982 to 1983. It was in my mind, it was like the first ever TV show based on a video game. Because right after Pac-Man, then you started getting some of these other ones like Saturday Supercade. And you know, that had, you know, the Donkey Kong show and Frogger and all that. And then you ended up with, you know, way more like Space Ace and all this stuff. But Pac-Man, this show was unique because it wasn't like they just carried the premise of like, here's the show. It wasn't a show about mazes and all that, but you had Pac-Man, Mrs. Pac-Man, and she was known as Pepper during the show. You had Baby Pac-Man because Baby Pac-Man was also a game. But Baby Pac was called Pac Baby. And then you had like their pets, and their pets were actual Pac-Men also. It was Chomp Chomp and Sour Puss.
Good Lord.
And they all lived in Pac-Land, and it was a place that was powered by the power pellets. It actually gave a storyline element to the power pellets. And so Pac-Man worked as the forest like security chief, and he was protecting these pellets from the evil Mesmeron, which is the best villain name that it's Mesmeron. And he had his gang were all the ghosts. So you know, every episode, you know, was a mix of like this comedy, this action. You actually had some world building, you had some lore, and then you had some wild ghost chomping going on because you had everybody there. You had Inky, Blinky, Pinky, and Clyde, and Sue, who was the purple female ghost. They all had different personalities. You had legendary Marty Ingalls as Pac-Man, and he played Pac-Man as like this mix of like Fred Flintstone meets the Honeymooners meets like, you know, all these other kind of almost like wholesome, you know, 50s and 60s TV dads.
I think I fell into a ghost trap. Please, please don't chomp me. I surrender.
Wait, you're not ghost monsters?
You're lucky we saw you when we did, or you would have been chomped but good. Who are you anyway?
Me? Everybody knows me. I'm Pac-Man.
But he was a true hero. You even had Super Pac-Man made it into season two.
I do remember Super Pac-Man.
Pac-Man Jr. made it into the show, and he ended up being like Pac-Man's nephew who rode a motorcycle, so you know he was cool.
Oh.
But anyway, it was like the thing that I remember the most about this show was the theme song.
Pac-Man.
That's me.
Pac-Man.
I must have those power pellets! Go find me the power pellet forest!
Because the theme song had like this cool little beat. You ready for some Cordova karaoke?
Here we go.
This crossing over from Flip City. It would go. And so this song played throughout. Here's the funny thing. This song played throughout the opening theme, and then it never stopped throughout every episode. You literally heard the theme song underlying every single episode, start to finish. It's an earworm. It'll stay with you the rest of the day, especially if you play, you know, that clip of that theme song, because I wish it was my ringtone if ringtones still existed. But it was just a blast. That show was so fun. And it spawned two holiday episodes too. So there's a Halloween episode of Pac-Man and a Christmas episode of Pac-Man. And the Christmas episode is an annual watch for me because it is that good.
Yeah. I do remember Pac-Man. Obviously, 82 for me, I'd have been 10. And I know I watched it because there's certain elements that I can remember, like Super Pac-Man and whatnot. But I don't know if it was part of my regular viewing. And looking at the Wikipedia page for the 82-83 fall season, it looks like it was up against the Sylvester and Tweety, Daffy and Speedy show, and then Shirt Tales. So you had the Pac-Man over on ABC. You had basically Looney Tunes on CBS and then Shirt Tales on NBC. I guarantee you I was watching the Looney Tunes stuff on CBS at the time and probably flipping back to Pac-Man during commercials.
I will tell you, Pac-Man got it got grouped in both years that it was out for. It was only for two seasons. It got grouped in with a pretty solid grouping of shows, too. That was really popular in the early 80s. And you'll see that in the rest of my top fives is that it would kind of pile some groups in for cartoons. And so one of those groupings is something I'm going to talk about in a little bit. But then another one is it was paired with Rubik the Amazing Cube. And so that was another one. And so that was Rubik was a one season wonder. But it definitely was some tough competition those mornings.
It's showing here on Wikipedia that when it debuted in 82, it was part of the Pac-Man Little Rascals Richie Rich Hour.
Yes.
From 8:30 to 9:30.
I didn't want to give away a spoiler, so I didn't want to.
followed by Mork and Mindy, Laverne and Shirley, and Fonz Hour. So
Nanu.
Yeah, oh, good lord. Okay, that's a good pick. Pac-Man, very iconic character. Everybody knows Pac-Man, right?
You gotta love him.
I defy you to find somebody who doesn't know who Pac-Man
is. It's not the 80s without him.
That's right. That's right. I will tell you, though, when it came to the video game, I preferred Ms. Pac-Man. I don't know why. I don't know what it was. Because they're basically the same game, right?
Yes.
But if given the choice, I played Ms. Pac-Man for some reason.
The color scheme was warmer.
Maybe that was it.
Yeah, it was the pinks and the blues and all that were a lot warmer than the yellow and the blacks. Yeah.
All right, my number five is a show called Space Stars.
Yes!
Space Stars! Galaxy of heroes teamed together in an interstellar battle against evil. Blast off on adventures as big as the cosmos itself. Race poised on the edge of time with Space Ghost and his young friends. Scream through the universe with Space Ace, Astro, and the Space Mutts as they spring into action. And somewhere deep in space, super danger threatens the Team Force.
Thank you.
Join the famed Herculoids in their new battles to preserve peace on the planet Quasar. Now, get set for 60 laser-blasting minutes of action, adventure, fun on Space Stars!
The show ran for only 11 episodes. It was on NBC from 81 to 82. It's a Hanna-Barbera show, and it was kind of an anthology show. It combined Space Ghost, the Herculoids, the Teen Force, and Astro and the Space Mutts. And what they would do, it was an hour-long show, and they'd each have their own separate little stories. But then at the end, there'd be a story that would combine, if not all of them, then it would be like Space Ghost and the Herculoids or Space Ghost and the Teen Force. And it was kind of my first introduction into kind of a, not a multiverse, but, you know, putting
like a shared
characters,
universe.
A shared universe. Exactly. That's the word I was looking for. And the funniest thing, the funniest anecdote I can give you about this show is that when I first started planning my Saturday morning cartoon episodes, I knew at some point I was going to talk about my top favorite cartoons. And number five on my list from the beginning was the Herculoids, which yes. was its own cartoon in the 60s. And as I started doing some research, I find that when I'm looking at the Herculoids on Wikipedia, for example, from the 60s, the original cartoon, the planet that they lived on was called, I don't know, Azmuth, something I'd never heard before. And I remember I was looking at that and I'm shaking my head and I said, no. Wikipedia's got this wrong. They lived on Quasar. That's,
yes.
That was a part of practically every episode. On Quasar, the Herculoids are doing this and that and they're barbecuing and stuff, you know? And so as I started looking deeper into it, it said Azmuth. And then in parentheses, it says Quasar in the 80s reboot. And I went, what? Yep. 80s reboot? And that's when I came across Space Stars. And I didn't remember Space Stars at all. I was scratching my head. What? Space Stars? I don't remember this. The Teen Force? That sounds so stupid. What is the Teen Force? Went to YouTube, pulled up the very first episode, or I think it was like the second episode, because it started with previous, or no, it was the first episode, because all the episodes start with Today on Space Stars, and they'd give you a little preview of each of the stories.
Today on Space Stars, Space Ghost Jan, Chase, and Blip discover a strange and deadly intruder to the star system. Then, the Teen Force roars into action against the all-evil Uglor and his plan for conquest. Herculoids! The battle cry of the Herculoids calls the members to face danger and possible destruction. Next on Space Stars.
And so I'm kind of watching that part and I'm like, I guess this looks familiar. And then as soon as the Teen Force came on, I was like, holy crap. I totally remember these guys. They had space motorcycles and I totally remembered it. I don't remember them being called Teen Force and I don't remember the show being called Space Stars. I still cannot access that memory in my brain, but It became fairly obvious when I started watching, because originally I started pulling up Herculoids, quote unquote, episodes from YouTube, only to discover they were all the episodes that were in, they were all the stories that were in Space Stars. They weren't the original 60s episodes. And these were the ones I watched. And so it hit me that, oh, so I wasn't just watching Herculoids. I was watching Space Stars. And, the Astro and the Space Mutts, I must have just changed the channel when that came on because none of that strikes any memory with me at all. But oh my God, Teen Force, especially during the opening theme song, when you see there's like a shot of the Teen Force because they actually live in a different dimension.
Yes.
And they, for some reason, they don't fight crime in their dimension. Their dimension must be crime free. So they have to come into our dimension to fight crime. It's like, can you imagine? I'm a superhero. I have superpowers, but there's no crime in my dimension. What am I going to do? Well, luckily we can go into another dimension and fight some crime. And
so there's some trouble.
Yeah. They have to travel to our dimension through a black hole. And I think it was called Black Hole X. And episode they would come out of Black Hole X. And it was Hanna-Barbera loved to recycle shots. And so that shot of them coming out of Black Hole X was used in every episode. They had the two little alien sidekicks whose names I suddenly can't remember. And I know it's not Gleep and Gloop because that's the Herculoids, but it's, you know, they didn't make any, they didn't talk. They didn't speak English. Michael Winslow from the Police Academy did their voices, made their little noises and stuff. But yeah, the moment I saw the intro and saw them coming out of Black Hole X, I just went, my mind just exploded in nostalgia. I couldn't believe I had forgotten about Teen Force.
Mysterious surge of energy is detected within Black Hole X, the gateway into our dimension for the Teen Force.
Slow down, kid. Coming, I just ate.
Sorry, Moleculant, but we have to check out that strange burst of energy from Mugglor's planet.
Why? It was probably just another one of his tantrums.
Maybe, but we'd better make sure.
Wasn't one of them, so like the, one of those aliens was also on the Flintstones, wasn't it? Like, wasn't it the Flintstones?
There was Fred and Barney Meet the Shmoo.
The Shmoo.
The Shmoo was very much like Gleep and Gloop from the Herculoids.
Pretty much the same.
Yeah. But it pretty much the same. It's just a blobulous white thing just with black eyes and a mouth. Yeah.
And I remember one of the things that always caught my, like, just mess with my brain with Space Stars was the thought of, like, what's Astro doing in this? How did he get from the Jetsons into this situation? And why don't I know that story? Because that's the story that I want to really know.
Yeah. And is it a prequel to the Jetsons? Or a sequel, you know,
do they know they have a superhero in their house? Like,
did he retire with the Jetsons? He's like, I'm getting too old for this stuff and goes to retire with the Jetsons. Or did at some point he outlived the Jetsons, I guess, and decided he had to go out and fight crime with a bunch of other space dogs. And then Space Ace, was that the guy with them? Because there was a human on the team with him.
I don't know if it was Space Ace, video game cartoon.
It wasn't Space Ace. I'm going to look it up real quick while you're thinking.
I think it was Ace something, though. The Space Stars, I love those, that conglomeration of cartoons. And it, you know, it was that whole mixture. And Space Ghost to me was like Space Batman. You know, it was like, here's this guy with two kids that look like Robin and they're doing their thing. But you have, kind of like this mix of like, it's Batman meets Superman in space.
Yeah.
And so it was like, it was just that fun, like, again, like that grouping. I was always into the Teen Force, you know, when it came to their little motorcycles. And I would always remember just kind of pretending to like, you know, like, this is my motorcycles, because each of the motorcycles had special powers.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, because you had Kid Comet, who just went really fast and could get so fast that he literally turned into a comet. You had Moleculad, who could basically change into anything. And then Elektra, who had like telepathy and telekinesis. And she had that star or something on her head. And that's where the beams of psychokinetic power would come through.
Love that.
Space Stars introduced me to Space Ghost.
And to answer your question, Jace, we're not sure where comets come from. We just know they do exist as masses of rock and frozen gas. One of the most famous comets in the universe, Halley's Comet, can be seen in 1986, Earth time.
Blip has a tail, Space Ghost.
You think they will name a comet after him?
I suppose only time will tell.
And the Herculoids. And to this day, I read the new Space Ghost comic book and looking forward to what I think I heard that there's a Herculoids comic coming out. But yeah, Astro and the Space Mutts, the dude is Space Ace.
Unaware of the bold heist by Mr. Galaxy, Space Ace and his canine colleagues are caught in a galactic rocket jam outside the bank.
Space Ace, wow, okay. I always attribute Space Ace to that video game that eventually came out with Saturday Super Kid.
Maybe they bought that from Hanna-Barbera and
it's the same
changed
guy.
Him up because, yeah.
It was Space the Ace. 80s. What about? No, there was no copyrights. Yeah. They don't know what they were. That's
all
awesome.
Right. What's your number four?
Okay, so my number four is a classic. And it was one of those things where I had to figure out for myself, this is Saturday morning cartoon territory, okay? And so going into this one particular, you know, character, I had to follow the rules because I was like, okay, what was peak Scooby-Doo territory for the 80s for me? And I honestly had to boil it down to there's syndicated Scooby-Doo, there's Saturday morning Scooby-Doo.
Yes.
And so for Saturday morning Scooby-Doo, I remembered back to one of my all-time favorite theme songs, and it was this grouping of the Richie Rich Scooby-Doo show and Scrappy too.
Richie Rich Scooby-Doo Show.
And Scrappy, too.
And so the cool thing about the Richie Rich Scooby-Doo Show was the theme song to Richie Rich, because it would start off with a little bit of Scooby-Doo intro, and then it would say, how rich can you get? Dun, 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 dun. You're never going to know till you get. Dun, 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 dun. This young boy, Richie Rich is his name. And so that whole theme song, the thing for me, first off, you want to talk about rituals for Saturday mornings. I needed to catch the theme songs to every one of these shows. If I did not catch the theme song, if for some reason I was getting a snack or if I was in the bathroom or whatever, the rest of the episode would be ruined for me because I couldn't rewind. It's not like I could pause. I had to watch the entire show. And so this is one of those things where Scooby-Doo theme songs, doesn't matter what iteration it is, they are the best theme songs on TV, period. And now you're mixing it in with this, you know, rich young boy, Richie Rich is his name. And you'd add this, and the cartoons never intersected. So it wasn't like you had Scooby-Doo meeting Richie Rich. This was just the pairing. And Richie Rich and Scooby-Doo each got paired with a bunch of different ones. Like you said, Richie Rich one season was paired with Pac-Man.
Yeah.
Scooby-Doo would get paired with anybody else who needed help, you know? And so they would kind of, you know, do this on a regular basis. This iteration of Scooby-Doo was the Fred and Velma-less episodes.
Oh, okay.
This is where there is no Fred, there is no Velma. There's no explanation really as to where they went. And you get an explanation later on.
What do you say we rest a minute, Scrappy?
Rest? Doggies don't rest. We're strong and tough, and we don't get tired, do we, Uncle Scoob? After all, we've only been hiking for 5 minutes.
Right, that's 5 minutes without food.
Food? I can fix that, Shaggy. Just leave it to me. Puppies come prepared because we're tough.
What's he gonna do? Rub two sticks together and fry up some wild berries, huh?
Yeah. I can do without Fred, but you need Velma. She was the one that solved all the mysteries.
I think, so one of the things with these episodes that kind of, that did it for me is the fact that the episodes without Fred and Velma were actually more supernatural based, and they actually ended up solving mysteries with actual supernatural like creatures that were not, you know, some old guy in a mask. And yeah, that was a real distinction between those episodes with Fred and Velma. For some reason, they were constantly catching crooks. You know, they were constantly catching and solving actual mysteries. Daphne and Shaggy and Scooby and all them, for some reason, were literally catching werewolves and ghosts and goblins and all that kind of stuff. And I think that's where it may have kind of leveled out for me, because they were less looking for clues and more trying to survive.
That's true. That's true. Yep.
Golly, look!
That's a mummy, and it's moving!
And then you get these Richie Rich episodes that were so much fun, because Richie Rich became this, like, if you watch these episodes, some episodes, it's just hijinks at home, and it's just about, you know, something that's going on. He has this, a kind of, you know, break it down. Like, you get this mashup, and it, from 80 to 81, it was when these guys came in. You combine these over-the-top adventures with Richie Rich's segments where he's either solving mansion mysteries, exploring outer space. He's got his dog named Dollar, which was way cool. You get his robot maid, which was, you know, also, you know, great. And they're off, they're either solving mysteries or they're like having hijinks at home. And they would actually segment these shows in between each other. So you'd get a Richie Rich segment, then you'd get a Scooby-Doo segment, and then you'd get another Richie Rich segment throughout that hour. And so to me, that was just a lot of fun. Richie Rich was completely different from his comic book version.
Hi, Dollar. Come on over to my private railroad. We're going to go for a ride.
Yeah.
You sure are going for a ride, Mutt?
That's delicious.
It ain't for you, goofball. This turkey's bait for that rich pooch.
Oh, bait. I get you, Butch.
So comic book Richie Rich was a little boy, like a little Dennis the Menace type looking boy. And for some reason, like when they put him in Saturday morning, they aged him up to about like 14 years old, which I think was a better choice, because I wouldn't have been down with it if Richie Rich was like a Dennis the Menace type character, but I was totally, you know, down with it with him as like a teen. I think one of my favorite things that always kind of made me, you know, laugh when I was a kid was his butler's name was Cadbury. And it always threw me back to, you know, Easter, those Cadbury eggs. And I couldn't help but think about Cadbury eggs every time I thought of Cadbury the butler.
Right on, Cadbury. You still remember all of our safe combinations.
Thank you, Master Richie, for trusting them to my memory.
That's okay, Cadbury. If there's anyone we trust, it's you.
I know some people are down on Scrappy, and I got to tell you, I'm not one of those people. I, you know, for one, it's like, to me, the whole idea of puppy power, maybe it had to do with the fact that when I was watching episodes with Scrappy, I was 4 or 5 years old. So I was Scrappy. I was the kid that was forced to hang out with his teen brother and cousins and, you know, all that. I was the kid that was like, always like, put him up, let me at him, you know? And so I was that feisty little kid. And so I could relate to Scrappy, you know? I kind of feel like they've done him dirty as the years have gone on.
Nice going, Uncle Scooby. You found him. I sure hope I'm as smart as you someday, Uncle Scooby.
Oh, it's nothing.
I could only imagine that the reason why they do that is because he was probably some kind of network note that nobody really wanted. But that's my number four.
I never had a problem with Scrappy-Doo. He came at that time when I was young enough that I could appreciate a character like Scrappy-Doo.
Yeah, it was one of those things where they had to fill the gap somehow. For some reason, they didn't want Fred and Velma in these episodes. The explanation you got later, and so there was another set of shows that featured Daphne, Shaggy, and Scooby that aired. That explanation was Velma was actually off working for NASA, and Fred was off like writing, like he was a writer. And yeah, and so it was kind of one of those things where as a kid, you're only getting this show once a week, and it's not episodic, it's not linear. And so for them to like throw in like a random throwaway explanation in some episode you're probably going to see once and never going to see again for 20 years, that was a little bit tough to swallow. But I will give you a spoiler. The teaming of Shaggy, Scooby, and Daphne will show up later in my honorable mentions.
All right. Cool.
Growing Up Geek will be back after these messages.
Hey folks, I want to tell you about Magazines and Monsters, a podcast that's dedicated to comic books as well as classic horror and sci-fi films. This podcast channel contains a bunch of shows like the Bronze Age of Horror Comics, a podcast that's, well, it's about Bronze Age horror comics. There's also The Brave and the Bob, a show celebrating Volume 1 of The Brave and the Bold from DC Comics and all things Bob Haney. But hey, let's not forget the main show itself, Magazines and Monsters, which rotates between old-school horror and sci-fi films with a heavy emphasis on the British studios Hammer and Amicus. Plus, you'll get a selection of episodes about comic books, ranging from DC to Marvel and everything in between. So join your host Billy D and a few of his favorite friends for a fun and positive look at his two favorite pastimes. Find Magazines and Monsters now on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And now back to Growing Up Geek. Scooby-Doo was one of those shows that it wasn't, whether it was the syndicated version or one of the Saturday morning versions, typically wasn't my go-to, but I feel like I watched a crap ton of Scooby-Doo. It just seemed to be on somewhere in some fashion all the time. Scooby-Doo was all over the place. And if you've ever watched Supernatural, they have a wonderful Scooby-Doo episode where they go into the animated world of Scooby-Doo, and it's great.
Scooby-Doo is one of those things where they've had so many series of Scooby-Doo since the 60s that each got syndicated separately.
Yeah.
That you would literally, and we only had, you know, what, three major networks and two UHF channels to choose from. You could have had a Scooby-Doo series on every single episode, each syndicated by a different like company, just to be on TV because of that. And there were some days where you would just pile on Scooby-Doo after Scooby-Doo in the 80s. And I was here for it. I was one of those meddling kids.
Yeah. And since then, they've done a crap ton of like animated features where they've teamed up with other properties like Batman. And the one that I haven't seen that I really want to see is the one where they team up with the band Kiss, because Kiss for me is my second greatest rock and roll band of all time. And
it's a good one. I will tell you, it's one of the good ones where they do it and they team up with the band Kiss, and it makes you wish they had done this in the 70s. Like it is one of those things where it don't sleep on those Scooby-Doo specials. Like they're now that I have a young daughter who's into stuff like that. She's into monsters and mysteries and all that. It's one of those things where watching those Scooby-Doo specials, those 1 hour movies or whatever, they're just great.
Yeah. Every once in a while, I jump on my Just Watch app to see if it's playing on any of the streaming services that I subscribe to. And so far I haven't been lucky, but I look for it a lot.
I've got an in. I'll help you find it.
Okay. Cool. All right. My number four is Thundar the Barbarian.
Yes.
Thundar the Barbarian. The year 1994. From out of space comes a runaway planet, hurtling between the Earth and the Moon, unleashing cosmic destruction. Man's civilization is cast in ruin. 2,000 years later, Earth is reborn. A strange new world rises from the old. A world of savagery, super science, and sorcery. But one man bursts his bonds to fight for justice. With his companions, Ookla the Mock and Princess Ariel, he pits his strength, his courage, and his fabulous sun sword against the forces of evil. He is Thundar the Barbarian.
This ran for two seasons. It was on ABC from 1980 to 1981, total of 21 episodes, and it blended two of my most favorite genres, sword and sorcery with post-apocalyptic fiction. And in fact, this is probably the show that got me into post-apocalyptic fiction, because I can't think of any other show that would have come out before that was set in a post-apocalyptic world, except for Thundar. And it was, what, thousands of years into the future? The great thing about these shows back then is the entire premise of the show, 9 times out of 10, was told to you completely in the opening theme song.
Yes.
And this is one of those that tells you that a runaway planet hurtles between the sun and the moon, or the earth and the moon, or the earth and the sun. I think it was the earth and the sun. Not many planets just flying through the solar, through the solar system, but it happened.
It's a runaway planet.
And it caused all this destruction, cracked the moon in half, tidal waves, blah, blah, blah. And now we're like, I don't know, 1,000 years into the future or something like that. And it's, you've got Thundar, who is a barbarian. I have a fondness for barbarians, having a love of Conan. I always, typically, if we're talking, especially a sword and sorcery type of group setting, if there's a big Barbarian, that's who I gravitate toward. I always gravitate toward the big, tough characters, whether it's like a Chewbacca or a Conan or Roadblock from G.I. Joe. There's just something about the big tough guys, especially if they have a heart of gold. You know, that touches me right there. So you have Thundar, who is a barbarian.
Why didn't your spell work on me, Gemini?
The pearl! Give me the pearl or
what? Your spell will fail again?
I warn you!
Go ahead, destroy me, if you can.
He was apparently enslaved at one point, and he, you know, before the show started, he escaped his bonds, and he has what is basically a lightsaber. It's called the Sun Sword. And he just travels around with his two companions, Ookla the Mock, which is, if Thundar wasn't part of the show, Ookla would have been my favorite because he's one of those Chewbacca-type characters that I typically gravitate toward. He had kind of a lion face and didn't talk. He just, that's what he did all the time and broke stuff and threw things around. And then you had Ariel, who was a sorceress. She was also the one who told us, the audience, all about what was going on around them. She knew all the history. She knew everything about everything, basically. It was created by Steve Gerber, the same guy that created Howard the Duck. But Thundar the Barbarian was one of my favorite. I mean, obviously number four, but I didn't miss it. And my Superman Super Show co-host let me know recently that there is a podcast out there that doesn't update very often. It talks about the Thundar episodes not in the order in which they released, but they apparently have mapped out this world. I mean, it's our world. It's Earth, but they go through the episodes geographically.
Oh, no way.
So I don't know how they figured it out. I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, but it's out there and it looks pretty good.
Man, I love stuff like that. Yeah. Who came first, Chewbacca or Ookla the Muck?
Chewbacca. I saw the original Star Wars in the theaters when it was re-released. I think, you know, cause it hit the theaters. I don't know. I might've been two or three years old in 1975 when it first was released. But then it did like a round of re-releases two or three times. And I think it hit the theaters again in 77. So I would have been five or six. But yeah, Chewbacca was first. But before Chewbacca was Bigfoot.
Yeah. So Star Wars, the first debut of Star Wars was on May 25th, 77. And so for me, that was because my first like movie theater experience was a re-release because I wasn't 1 year old. But it was one of those like re-releases because that was back in the glory days when like a movie can get re-released and all that. But I was always very curious about that because Ookla the Mock clearly, you know, was inspired by Chewbacca as far as, you know, like a character goes. But then the rest of it, you know, has that Conan vibe, you know, as far as, you know, the rest of the cast and all that. But I love me. This is the thing what I love about the Hercules, about Thundar the Barbarian. I love a good power sword. Like,
yes,
you know, that's what, you know, drives me to, you know, to He-Man. You know, that's what drives me to another honorable mention that I'll share later. But it's one of those things where it's like, man, I love a good, you know, power sword. And Thundar always struck me as by name a barbarian, but by character, not a barbarian, but very much a Hanna-Barbera lead character. Like it was very much like almost like Reed Richards with a with a sword and his like leadership skills, you know,
very much inspired by Conan because that.
Yes.
Conan, by definition, was a barbarian. He grew up in, you know, he didn't grow up in the civilized part of the world. And that was one of the things that Robert E. Howard would point out a lot in his stories is that Conan would go into these big cities and he'd be amongst civilization and the civilized people. And he would find that the way he treated people tended to be more civilized than a lot of these corrupt, you know, politicians and rulers and blah, blah, blah. And so that's kind of, you know, and so Conan becomes a really smart, wise, tactical genius, that kind of stuff. And that, you know, born leader, I mean, he becomes king at one point. So
it's true.
I think Thundar was hugely inspired by him and the Sun Sword. Awesome. carried it on the back of his wrist, on his forearm, basically, because it was just this tiny little hilt.
Yeah, just the hilt.
And it wasn't. So it obviously that was inspired by lightsabers, but it didn't look like a lightsaber. It was more
right.
flame almost. It was kind of a crackly energy flame type of blade.
Now, let me ask you this. Can we expect a special episode of Hither Came Conan and have a Thundar focused episode where you do a deep dive for us?
I don't know. I may do that eventually on Growing Up Geek. I'm trying to stick to solely Conan on Hither Came Conan, but we'll see. You never know what might crawl up my behind at some point in the future. And I get bored and get some inspiration and decide to do certain things. So,
all right, sign me up for it. I'm all about it. I want to hear it.
Yeah, I mean, I have an episode over there talking about the very first Conan the Adventurer cartoon from the 90s. So, which was some crazy stuff.
All good stuff. We got to do a syndicated episode one day. My number three is another classic. So I have to get back to like the classic thing, because this is one of those things where I have very specific memories of the opening to this cartoon. And I'm talking about specifically the Bugs Bunny Roadrunner Hour. And the opening to that is this like almost like a sophisticated orchestra, you know, set up. And all of a sudden
it's going through my head right now. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Then you go, dun, 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 overture, light the lights. And then you literally have Daffy and Bugs doing the, you know, doing the big dance to On with the Show. This is it.
Overture, cut the lights. This is it, the night of nights. No more rehearsing and nursing a part. We know every part by heart. Overture, cut the lights. This is it, we'll hit the heights. And oh, what heights we'll hit. On with the show, this is it.
Starring that Oscar-winning rabbit, Bugs Bunny.
That particular theme song, more than the actual Merry Melodies theme song or anything like that, always sticks in my head. And it's particular because of the Saturday morning version of the Bugs Bunny Roadrunner Hour. It was, at one point, the longest running cartoon out there. It started in 1968 when the show actually started out. And of course, it brought all of the classics. This is where you saw everything classic when it came to Looney Tunes, Merry Melodies. You had Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck. Of course, you had the Roadrunner. You had Wile E. Coyote, you know, and you had all the other, you know, all the other characters, all voiced by the incredible Mel Blanc. Every episode started off with, you know, Bugs and Daffy doing their sing song. Then you jumped into all these shorts. And this is where you got your Looney Tunes fix as a kid. It was one of those things where basically the stuff that you can't even get anymore, or you're not even allowed to see anymore or watch anymore. You know, this is the main, I call it, this is Bugs Bunny Prime. Like this is where you would get all of that on a Saturday morning. Again, Bugs Bunny was everywhere because you could watch Looney Tunes. You could see Merry Melodies. You could see all that stuff in so many different outlets, but on a Saturday morning, in the late 70s and the early 80s, Bugs Bunny Roadrunner, that was it.
Hey, what's the matter with you anyway? Don't you even know a rabbit when you see one?
It's true, Doc. I'm a rabbit, all right. Would you like to shoot me now or wait till you get home?
Shoot him now! Shoot him now!
You keep out of this. He doesn't have to shoot you now.
He just so have to shoot me now. I command that you shoot me now.
Yeah. They even had a bunch of other hours. Like you talked about it, the Sylvester Tweety hour. You had, you know, all of these other characters. You had, I think, like, even like, I think Daffy had his own hour, you know, also. But it was just all excuses to just show Bugs Bunny clips. And
yeah, it was all the same thing, just repackaged. So people thought they were getting something new, and it was just all the same stuff.
Come on out and fight if you're not chicken!
Well, so it's Halloween again so soon? That's a nice costume, Sonny, but that knife is too sharp for little boys to play with. We better fix this so you don't hurt yourself. You shouldn't be out so late. Now go straight home. Your mother will worry.
And you can't, I mean, honestly, it's like I've seen every iteration of Bugs from now till, you know, up until recently, right? But nothing is better than those early versions, those early clips and those shorts. He recently had a birthday, Bugs Bunny did, and MeTV Toons did an entire documentary on Bugs Bunny. It's worth looking out and looking after and finding and seeing, because that was it. And for me on a Saturday morning, most of my Saturdays, we talk about the ritual. Most of my Saturdays started off with Bugs and Roadrunner.
Yep.
You know, it would happen early in the morning.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They kick things off for you. And there's no better way to kind of do that, to, you know, you get that breakfast Pop-Tart in your hand, you know, in your hand, you got that, you know, glass of milk, and then here you are ready to spit all that milk out onto the screen, because here's Bugs Bunny wearing a dress again. And so it's it is one of my fondest Saturday morning memories.
Yeah, Bugs Bunny was a huge part of my Saturday mornings. It is one of my honorable mentions. It bounced back and forth between top five and honorable mention a number of times because it was a big part. But the one piece of trivia I've always liked about Bugs Bunny is the fact that Mel Blanc, whenever you had Bugs chewing on a carrot and talking, Mel Blanc would literally eat a carrot while he was recording. He either just didn't like them or he was allergic to them. So he had a big tub next to him so he could spit out the, because he never swallowed the carrot. He always had to spit it out. I always enjoyed that. But which is your, of the Looney Tunes characters, which is your favorite?
So honestly, of all of those guys, I probably, that's a really good question, because for me, I was always a like straight up like Bugs guy. Like I loved Bugs Bunny himself. But if I had to kind of go like non-Bugs and I had to pick, you know, the next person up, you can't beat Wile E. Coyote and the Roadrunner. I mean, and
yeah,
for me, I wanted Wile E. Coyote to win so bad as a kid because I could not stand the Roadrunner. But those things were so, as a kid, I loved that kind of like the violent end in every one of those cartoons. It was like I lived for the sound of Wile E. Coyote landing. I live for the sound of the anvil whacking them in the face. Acme should be sued for every penny they have because none of their stuff worked for that poor guy. It's
you know, my daughter, my middle child, my daughter was telling me last night that there was an animated film that was made called, I don't remember what it was called, but it was Wile E. Coyote suing Acme. That's what the premise it was. And it's made, it's in the can, but it got shelved when this whole, you know, when they changed new owners and all that,
oh,
and they
is
shelved
that the
a
one
bunch
that
of
got
stuff
canned?
Like Batgirl and yeah.
That's the one with that starred John Cena.
Yes. Yeah.
That's one of John Cena did a whole thing. They did a whole I'm kind of mad at Warner Brothers for a lot of things got shelved that I was kind of looking forward to seeing and all that. Did you know another fun fact? Did you know that there was a sequel to Space Jam planned? But it was going to star Tony Hawk, and it was supposed to be I don't know if it was going to be called like Skate Jam, you know, or whatever, but it was supposed to be a Looney Tunes Tony Hawk skateboarding movie. And
that would have been awesome.
And because Looney Tunes Back in Action, the one that starred Brandon Fraser, because that one tanked so badly, they shelved every other Warner Looney Tunes movie plan. But I would have lived to seen Tony Hawk with the Looney Tunes, because that was right up my alley when I was a teenager and all that kind of stuff.
Here's the problem sometimes when they try to make these feature films with the Looney Tunes. For those of our generation, we're used to a certain look.
Yes.
You know, a certain movement, a certain style. And when they update them using modern technology, there's almost like a sheen or a shine to the characters that just doesn't seem right.
Oh,
and,
I agree.
But I loved Space Jam. Bill Murray was excellent in his bits in the movie. I even liked the new Space Jam with
LeBron James.
LeBron James, yeah.
The thing I would tell you is that like I wish that we can get another flat 2D drawn version of the Looney Tunes characters, because the other part that I think that, and this is Wayne's soapbox is creeping into growing up geek. But the other problem that I have is that we keep wanting to put these characters in a feature length adventure when they were never designed to be that. You were meant to get Porky Pig in a short 3-minute sketch. You were meant to get Daffy Duck in short bursts. And I still cannot figure out for the life of me why they can't just, if they want to do something new with them, why can't you just do a new movie or something like that where you're just getting these shorts again? Get everybody in these. Everybody's attention spans are short anyway. Just slap it all together and make that happen. They tried that, I think, with some new episodes on Max with Looney Tunes.
Yeah.
But again, make them flat 2D. I want to see some pencil marks in there. And, let's go for it. That's how I want my my Saturday morning Looney Tunes.
So my favorite Looney Tunes character, Bugs Bunny, has always been number two. I love Bugs Bunny. He has this cocky self-assurance.
Oh, yeah.
Even when he's got Elmer Fudd's gun in his face, he knows he's not. He knows he's walking away from that. He knows that he knows that he's always going to best whoever he's up against. And I just love that about Bugs Bunny.
What's up, Doc? What you got into Turin?
Ah, monsieur. Here I have the most beautiful rabbit.
Rabbit, eh? Mind if I have a peek at him?
But of course, monsieur. Regarde.
Sort of short-eared critter, ain't he, Duck?
But my favorite has always been Daffy Duck. And the go-to that I always think of with Daffy Duck is the short with Daffy and Bugs and Elmer Fudd, you know, the duck season, rabbit season, rabbit duck season. There's a moment in that short where I think Bugs Bunny is telling Elmer Fudd that there are other hobbies, there are other things that he can do. And suddenly Daffy just jumps onto screen in a tennis outfit with the tennis. Anyone for tennis? And then, of course, Elmer plugs him with the shotgun.
I'm sorry, fellas, but I'm a vegetarian. I just hunt for the sport of it.
Oh, yeah? Well, there's other sport besides hunting, you know.
Anyone for tennis? Nice game.
And Daffy has always been my favorite.
I love that. Yeah, no, I'm a sucker for the, you know, duck season, shoot me now.
There's a Western short with Daffy Duck and Porky Pig is his sidekick, and they go into a town and there's a guy who's, you know, Daffy's supposed to be this Western hero, but of course he's Daffy Duck, and I always love Daffy.
The older I get, the more I relate to Porky Pig, though, and it's.
Yeah.
And I'll never, one of my, I gotta tell you the one day, like I just, one day I want to go to like counseling or something and just lay down on the couch and just tell the counselor and just be like, my name is Elma J. Fudd, millionaire. I own a mansion and a yacht. And then, get booted up. But yeah, that's another great one. That's a great one. Let's stop right now. Let's just watch some Looney Tunes.
Yes. No, we have to continue.
Oh, okay.
On the next episode of Growing Up Geek, the adventure continues in our epic two-part journey into Saturday morning madness as Wayne and I continue our top five most favorite Saturday morning cartoons of all time countdown extravaganza. You'll get my final three picks, Wayne's final two, and more honorable mentions than you can shake a stick at. All that and more is coming next week in the season one finale of Growing Up Geek. Don't miss it! I want to thank you for listening to this episode of Growing Up Geek. Questions and comments can be directed to growingupgeekpodcast@gmail.com. If you enjoyed the show, you can help to boost our presence online by leaving a rating or review on your favorite podcast app. I also invite you to join our subscription program, Stephen or Else Beyond. And in return, you'll get episodes of Growing Up Geek early and ad-free. Check out the link in the show notes or just go to growingupgeekpodcast.com to sign up today. Growing Up Geek is a presentation of Stephen or Else Media. For more nerdy content hosted by me, check out StephenRElse.com.
I just don't think I could move through life knowing that a guy named Steven did this to me.
How could you let this happen, Steven?
Your podcast sucks.
Hail to the king, baby.
Steven! Thank God.
had a horrible feeling I was going to be the only one here.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.